Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And during the second half of the show, we will be turning our attention to the quagga mussel, an invasive species here in the western U.S. And we'll be speaking with Crystal Tucker. She's a sergeant with the Department of Wildlife Resources Aquatic Invasive Species Operations. And we'll be talking about their program involving boat inspections and enforcement. And we'll get an update from this past very busy weekend of the 4th of July. But we'll start out by talking about the quagga mussels themselves and why are we concerned. So, Crystal, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with just that. What is a quagga mussel? Where did they come from?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's kind of an interesting name, and a lot of people are kind of curious about what the big deal is about quagga mussels. Basically, as you kind of think of an aquatic mussel, it's a certain species that has come over from over in the Black and the Caspian Sea. It's an invasive mussel to the U.S. It was not here originally. It came over in the big barges over the Atlantic and got dumped into the Great Lakes in the late 80s. And it's kind of infiltrated the whole U.S. since then. There's two different types that we're concerned about. It's the zebra and the quagga mussel. They're both freshwater bivalve mollusks, and they're just incredibly harmful. They reproduce really, really quick, and part of their characteristics is that they'll filter the water in such a way that they'll eat all the plankton and everything, and it takes away a food source from our fish, and as well as can really foul up boat, large water pipes. It can really do some serious damage to our infrastructure. So they're definitely something that we don't want here.
I think often when we hear about it and we hear about the risks and the problems, it does have to do with our human infrastructure, which makes sense. But you also mentioned kind of the impacts on the native ecosystem. So they're filter feeders. Talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah, so the way that they get all their nutrients is that they bring things in and they have kind of a natural filter. And they can filter up to 1 liter of water a day, which doesn't sound like a lot. But when you think about how many of these, how quickly they reproduce, that can be an unsettling amount of water. And when they remove that plankton and all those nutrients from the water, it causes some really horrible imbalances to the ecosystem and for different things that live in that water, especially fish. You know, here in Utah, we really prize, we have a lot of pride in our fish and our aquatics and the ability to fish and the diversity that we have. They take away all those nutrients away, and it causes them to be stunted a lot of the times. And it can also degrade the water's quality and taste and odor for the human side of it. So not fun.
Interesting.
And when did they get out here and how?
Sure. So they came over, like I said, from the Caspian Sea and from the Black Lake in the 80s or so, through these big barges through the transatlantic shipments, just bringing all of their goods and everything. And then those came into the Great Lakes up in the northern portion of the U.S., and they got dumped into the Great Lakes. And since then, and that was late 80s, early 90s. And since then, those were the zebra mussels. They've cost the power industry up there in the Great Lakes $3.1 billion just between 1993 and 99, just having to deal with the effects of these. And then from there, they slowly started coming out. And primarily, the biggest vector of transport are recreational boats, since they can be on the water. They'll take up the water where the mussels, the villagers, they're like the little baby mussels. They'll get brought up in that standing water, and then, you know, we all like to recreate in different water bodies with boats, and they would be transported on land and dumped invariably into other water bodies. And that's how they started slowly making their way from the eastern portion of the U.S., which is completely infested with zebra and some quagga mussels, and it started coming into Utah. We saw it at Lake Mead, and it has now infiltrated into Lake Powell. We're lucky in Utah that our program is very aggressive for containing it to Lake Powell and preventing it from getting into other water bodies. So far, we only had it at Lake Powell, and we're trying to keep it that way.
You mentioned that these mussels, you know, are pretty small. The little baby mussels can be drawn up into, you know, the bilge water or whatever. Give us a description of what these look like and just how small they can be.
Sure. So the villagers, the baby ones, are essentially microscopic. We can't see those with our human eye. So that's why it's so dangerous anytime that we have water that is being transported from an infested water into a clean water body, because we can't feed them. And yet even a gallon of water can have millions of these villagers in it. The adult mussels can get up to 1 to 2 inches long, so they're still not very long, but they like to form into these dipped clusters. They look like a mussel, like you would kind of think when you think of regular mussels. They have different striations. The zebras have more of a jagged kind of look, and they're more of a triangular pattern, and the quaggas are more rounded. We have quagga mussels out here. We haven't had any positive identifications of anything that zebra, but we have had them be unwillingly, you know, transported in from boats and everything. But yeah, so they're pretty distinctive. They're not going to look like anything that you'd see naturally around here.
The important thing to note, I guess, is that you can't just do a visual inspection of your boat and say, well, there's some water in there, but the water doesn't have a mussel in it or whatever, because it could have these microscopic, tiny little mussels just waiting to pounce, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're incredibly difficult to see. Even the adult ones, they like to hang out in those very small, damp, kind of rough areas in a boat along the back where the engine is. They'll go on the trailer, on the hull. They'll get into the inside in the bilge where we can't visually see it. And that's why we ask everybody to clean, drain, and dry. And if they can follow clean, drain, and dry, as well as getting visual inspections prior to going into the water, then we'll keep our waters clean.
And you mentioned we've had a really successful containment strategy here in Utah, and have kept these in Lake Powell and haven't experienced a spread to our other water bodies. So let's talk about what that program looks like, and when did that get started?
Sure. So we've had our program for about 10 or so years now, and it's changed, as you can imagine, through that time. But at first, we were trying to prevent everything. And then once we found out that Lake Powell had become infested, we switched our strategy to one of containment in Lake Powell and all of those ramps around it, and to prevention on all the other water bodies that we have in Utah. And the way that we have been successful with this program is that we just have a slew of very talented technicians at every major water body that can that has a boat ramp and is utilized by the public, to just ensure they'll do visual inspections to make sure there's no clogging mussels. When we find that there's any standing water, or people haven't properly clean, drained, and dried before taking their boat to a clean water body, we'll do what's called a decontamination. It's just a hot water wash. And we found that at temperatures between 120 and 140 for about 10 seconds on the surface, it's very successful in killing the adults and the villagers. And so we have found that that's very successful. We've had people ask, hey, how about using chemicals, bleach, or whatever? Mm-hmm. But remember, with mussels being a bivalve, they'll actually close their shell, and they can withhold being in a cup of bleach for 30 days.
What?
So they're pretty tough little cookies. So we have a very comprehensive program to make sure that we're not having them go anywhere else. And we also have biologists that are doing constant sampling of our waters to ensure that we don't have any DNA evidence that quagga mussels have come into the water as well.
I thought coronavirus was hardy. I mean, you can inactivate a coronavirus with chlorine, you know, but these guys will survive that if they, you know, given enough, if they respond quick enough, they can survive a real degraded environment like that. So hot water.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about hot water and time and contact.
Yeah. Yep. Hot water and time, those are the two big things, and just making sure that we're being very methodical. Our technicians are trained to just take their time, make sure that that boat is going to be nice and thoroughly hot washed prior to letting it go anywhere. But yeah, I mean, you think 2020 is bad with coronavirus, add mussels, and it's made for an interesting summer for the Division of Wildlife.
You didn't hear our first interview about microplastics. It's a show, I'm telling you. All right.
I want to talk a little bit more about the clean and drain and dry. So first of all, what kinds of boats do these protocols apply to? Like, what kind of watercraft? Do I need to worry about this with my paddleboard, or, you know, something like that,
my
in addition
ski,
to my ski boat or
my sailboat?
Yeah, that's a great question. So if it touches the water and if it floats, Utah considers it a boat. So that's going to include paddleboard, kayaks, canoes, any kind of recreation boat, fishing boat, you know. And as it gets more complex in the amount of raw water systems that that boat can take in, then we're more and more concerned because that's more and more places for standing water to stay and where villagers and adult mussels can hide. But yeah, we are still concerned about paddleboards and kayaks, and that's why the clean, drain, and dry is so important. It's just making sure that with cleaning, you're taking off any vegetation. You don't have any, you know, if you were fishing and you had, you know, some crawdads or something in your live well, we take those all out, take off any plant matter, and just make sure that the area is clean. Then drain all of that water, like we said, those villagers. We can't see them, but they're certainly a threat. And then drying your boat completely. That means if you use, like, your rope, your anchor, that you, after you rinse that off, make sure it's nice and clean, do a quick inspection on it. We like you to lay it out and let it dry in the sun until it's completely dry, and that's going to help to get rid of any last remnants that we could have. Obviously, with the canoe, kayaks, paddleboards, they're not going to be quite as big of a risk because they're less likely to hold that standing water that we're concerned on, and they dry faster. But they're even getting more complex now. I've seen ones that have small motors on the back of them, and obviously that's going to be a little bit more of a concern to us.
So you need to kind of drain all the equipment, like drain the bilge or drain any water tanks as well, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yep. The ballast, the bilge, anything that can take some of that raw water up from the lake, even if it's a clean lake, we want to make sure that we're draining everything out.
Now, what if my watercraft, we'll call it, just stays in that same body of water all the time? Or what if that's the only body of water I take my boat to, and then I pull it out and I take it home, and then I take it back to that Jordanelle, et cetera? Does that require cleaning every time?
Yes, every time that you leave the water body and prior to going into that next water body, we want to make sure that your boat is as clean, drained, and dried as possible, just to make sure. Because oftentimes with these mussels, if they're in there and we get a sampling through checking the water, it might be too late and we're already concerned about this water. So if everybody treats these water bodies that we have designated as clean or uninfested as a possible suspect water and they go through these protocols, it's going to just ensure that they're going to continue to stay clean because they're being vigilant. And that's what we're asking our boaters to do, is take time, know your equipment well, and drain everything really well prior to going from a water body, even if it's a clean one like Jordanelle.
And even if it's the same water body?
Like if you're just...
Yeah, even if...
If all I do is have my sailboat at Jordanelle, do I have to take it out and clean it or not?
You don't have to get the hot water wash if you're able to keep, I don't know the specifics about your sailboat as far as how complex it is or anything, but you are required to still do that clean, drain, and dry.
Okay.
Because we can't verify that every single water is going to continue to stay clean, and it's just part of the AIS protocols by Utah statute and rule that we do ask you to do that, even if it's the same water body year after year.
Okay.
And so tell us about the testing, I guess. You mentioned testing for genetic materials in our other water bodies to see if they have any sign of these. How does that work?
Well, I'm not a biologist, but I'll tell you kind of the way that I understand it. I've gone and I've been able to sample the water with one of our awesome AIS biologists a couple of years ago. But basically, they have a large apparatus that sinks down to the bottom, and as they drop it down and they start bringing it back up with all of the ropes, it captures water in from the bottom where the intermediate stage between juveniles and adults is the settler stage. As they get bigger, the mussels get heavy and they drop to the bottom, and that's where they start making these dense colonies and start doing the reproducing and everything. So they sample water from the bottom, and then as they're bringing it up, they're capturing more water and material through the entire water column. And then they'll send off those samples to a laboratory, and they'll run, I want to say that they do PCR, I'm not exactly sure, but they're testing to make sure that we don't have any of that genetic material get popped up in the results. And if it does, then it triggers this being a possible suspect water. We do additional testing. We have a dive team that we've utilized in the past, and they'll go to docks and places where you'll typically see these colonies, and they'll look for quagga mussels. And if we get a sample DNA plus a physical sample that we can look under a microscope and confirm that it's a quagga or a zebra mussel, then we'll consider that a positive water body. And then we throw additional protocols in place. And it would work kind of like with Lake Powell, which is an infested water body, where it'd be more of a containment and a strategy to make sure that we're being extra careful with this water body. And it has to have so many years of negative or comes off of before it comes off of our positive water body. We've had this happen numerous times. Red Fleet had it, Deer Creek had it not too long ago. It takes many years of continued negative sampling before it comes off the water. So we're very, or off the list, right. We're very aggressive on making sure that if we even have a single positive, that we start enacting protocols right away to make sure that that water body doesn't get infested either.
Well, if you are just joining us, we're speaking with Crystal Tucker with the Department of Wildlife Resources, where she is a sergeant with the Aquatic Invasive Species Operations. And we're talking about quagga mussels and zebra mussels, these invasive species that can impact our native ecosystems and also our human infrastructure, and not to mention the boats that we have on the water. So, Crystal, I'm sure this past weekend was incredibly busy for you with the long weekend and the hot temperatures and everybody wanting to be on the water. So what is a holiday summer weekend look like for you and your enforcement efforts?
Oh, it's pretty crazy. I was down at Bullfrog, which is the northern portion of Lake Powell, and we were running an administrative checkpoint, which essentially means that we're ensuring that the boats are going through the exit inspection and being inspected prior to leaving Lake Powell, since we know it's an infested water body. And we had a very high compliance rate, which I was very pleased with. It was about 90 or so percent. And we checked almost 600 boats throughout 2 days. And that's nothing to say of our efforts on the inspection stations statewide. They did a fantastic job. We looked at just around 16,500 boats throughout the state at our various inspection stations, and did 322 hot water decontaminations. Our officers issued around 55 citations and warning citations for AIS-related violations throughout the state. So we all worked very hard, and it was hot, but well worth it.
I'm sorry, AIS?
I'm sorry, Aquatic Invasive Species is AIS.
Oh, okay.
And that includes our mussel program. There's other aquatic invasive species as well, but these are our prevalent concern here in Utah. Well,
why not?
Sure.
So what is it you're looking for when you're doing an inspection that then triggers the need to do hot water decontamination?
That's a great question. So if we do find any mussels or an excessive amount of standing water, and the process looks a little bit different whether you're exiting Lake Powell or if you're coming into a different water body because of that prevention versus containment strategies. But essentially, we're looking for the same thing. We're making sure that in all those target areas where mussels could be found, that we're not finding them. If there's a lot of standing water, we want to get rid of that. And if somebody can't make their dry time prior to launching to another water body, it's 7 days currently in the summer, unless you have a very complex boat, and then it's a 30-day dry time before you launch into another water body from Lake Powell. If any of those things are triggered, then we do that hot water wash, and just to ensure that your boat is nice and clean and that all the water that is now in there is clean.
So I'm also curious what triggers a citation. Like what are people doing or not doing that makes that happen?
Yeah, that's something that we definitely talk a lot about. So you have to have your drain plugs pulled after you leave your water body, and they have to remain pulled until you enter you're about to have your boat enter another water body. That's a new law that took effect on July 1st. It used to be the standard law was all drain plugs pulled from Lake Powell because we knew it was infested water, but now they made that a general statewide rule. So just make sure that you put your drain plug back before you go into the water. You don't want to have a submerged boat there on the ramp, but that is one of our rules. But the biggest thing that we dealt with this past weekend is that it is mandatory when our inspection stations are open for any kind of watercraft to get an inspection. It's required by law. So the majority of the violations I dealt with at Bullfrog this past weekend during the administrative checkpoint were just ensuring that people were getting that exit inspection. They received the paperwork. If they couldn't get their boat decontaminated there, we give them what's called a little plastic orange seal, and it's a dirty seal. And anywhere that they take that boat throughout the state and our technicians at that other water body see that orange seal, they know that this is a boat we need to pay more attention to. It's been at an infested water and it has not been decontaminated, so there could be unverified water that could contain mussels.
All right, we only have a couple more minutes, but a couple listeners texted in. Real quick, you said Deer Creek and Jordanelle do not have quagga mussels at this time?
That's correct. The only water body in the entire state of Utah right now is Lake Powell.
Okay, so far so good. Good job.
We're doing great.
All right. So far so good. Compliance is critical.
Yeah, definitely.
The other one, going back to them, do these mussels have any natural predators here? Can't we, you know, aren't there any fish or birds or can't we eat them or something? Is there anything?
Well, I don't think I'd want to eat them. At this time, there's one or two papers that have come out of a few small sunfish breeds that could eat them, but the amount of reproduction that these do, there's no way that you'd want to introduce a predator in the numbers that would be necessary for a place like Lake Powell. And like I said before, bleach doesn't work. We haven't found a natural predator for them yet. So eradication is pretty much impossible unless you have a very, very small water where you could just drain the whole thing. Obviously, we can't drain Lake Powell, so that option's off the table.
No, we're draining it in other ways.
That's right.
On a slow turn.
Well,
so that's true. I had to get that in there. Go ahead.
little by little.
You get the last question or so now.
You know, I was just going to ask if people have a boat or they're traveling or they want to learn more about this, what website or other resources do you recommend?
Thank you. It's going to be the Utah Division of Wildlife at wildlife.utah.gov/mussels.
Perfect.
Well, Sergeant Tucker, thank you so much for joining us and filling us in on the latest. It's actually encouraging that this quagga mussels have been around for years. We've been covering this story for years when they were first noticed. And at least Deer Creek Reservoir, our local reservoirs, remain quote unquote clean. So as long as we continue to do the right thing, they'll continue to be clean, we hope. So thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you for having me. Have a nice day.
Thank you.